Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yarapi digibha jaino yajvino yeva rajarshayak kintu param ride shairan asyameva mameyam iti kvit vairanubandayam visvidya svayam upasamhritaha. Okay, I don't expect anybody to be able to repeat that. Yatapi, although dik iba jainaha, who are victorious in all directions, yajvinaha, expert in performing great sacrifices. All of whom. Vai. Indeed. Raja Rishayaha. Very great saintly kings. Kim tu. But, only this earth, Mridhe, in battle, Shairan, lying down, Asyam, on this earth, Eva, indeed, Mama, mine, Iyam, this, Iti, considering in that way, Krita, on which is created, Vaira Anubandayam, a relationship of enmity with others. Visvijaya, giving up. Swayam, his own life. Upasangrita, being killed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. This is Jadabharat, the great devotee speaking to King, what's his name? Varugana, yeah. There were many great saintly kings who were very expert in performing sacrificial rituals and very competent in conquering other kingdoms. Yet despite their power, they could not attain the loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is because those great kings could not even conquer the false consciousness of I am this body and this is my property. Thus they simply caused enmity with rival kings, fought with them, and died, without having discharged life's real mission. He's talking to such a king. So he's not just talking theoretically. He's trying to tell Rahugana something about himself, about Rahugana's self. Prabhupada's purport. The real mission of life for the conditioned soul is to reestablish the forgotten relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage in devotional service so that he may receive Krishna consciousness after giving up the body. One doesn't have to give up his occupation as a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, or whatever. In any position, while discharging his prescribed duty, one can develop Krishna consciousness simply by associating with devotees who are representatives of Krishna and who can teach this science. Regretfully, the big politicians and leaders in this material world simply create enmity and are not interested with spiritual advancement. Material advancement may be very pleasing to an ordinary man, but ultimately he is defeated because he identifies himself with the material body and considers everything related to it to be his property. This is ignorance. Actually, nothing belongs to him, nor even the body. By one's karma, not even the body. By one's karma, one gets a particular body. And if it does not utilize his body to please the personality of Godhead, all his activities are frustrated. The real purpose of life is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter. Atak pumbir dvija shreshta varnashrama vibhagasaha svanushtitasya dharmasya samsidhir haritoshanam. It really doesn't matter what activity a man engages in. If he can simply satisfy the Supreme Lord, his life is successful. So you don't have to become a world conqueror in politics or in business or in anything else to be successful in life. Just become Krishna conscious. The Bhagavatam gives a lot of space to discussing these dynasties of kings, particularly in the two very long dynasties, beginning from the sun god and the moon god. It's a different kind of history than we learned in school. This is a history on a much vaster scale, going back hundreds of millions of years. The dynasty, supposedly, according to the Bhagavatam and other Puranas, the dynasties of the sun god and the moon god have been intact for hundreds and millions of years, going back to the creation of the universe. How this is possible, we have to use our intelligence to understand. It's not necessarily that all these kings were living on the earth throughout these hundreds of millions of years. The dynasty of the sun god and of the moon god begin on the heavenly planets and descend to earth and to other planets. Just like Prabhupada told us, that there, as it tells us in the Padma Purana, there are 8,400,000 different species of life, but it's not that on any particular planet all those species of life are present at one time. You'll find, if you want to see dinosaurs, you'll have to go to some other planet to find them at this current time. Similarly, these dynasties weren't always present on the earth throughout all these millions of years, hundreds of millions of years. But anyway, Bhagavatam manages to mention close to 3,000 different kings in these two dynasties. Many of them were great devotees. Some of them were not pure devotees, but still they were, because they were members of families of great devotees, they were considered Rajarshis, saintly kings, even the ones who weren't pure devotees. These dynasties, especially the dynasty of the moon god, is called Harivamsa, Krishna's family. And just by being members of that family, these were very elevated souls. Vedic culture was maintained by these great kings. This is spiritual service. To protect the principles of religion by organizing and maintaining the Varnashram Dharma, the Vedic system for social organization, which is focused on Krishna consciousness. On the periphery of the Varnashram system, people are engaged in materialistic activities and don't have much actual Krishna consciousness. That's the karma kanda section. And just like there is a force of centrifugal force, that things tend to go out of orbit. So human beings tend in the material world to become materialistic. It's the natural centrifugal force of nature, that people tend, by the influence of the material energy, to forget their Krishna consciousness and become materialistic. So that phenomena is seen even in the Vedic culture, that human beings, and sometimes even the leaders of society, tend to become materialistic. But the Varnashram system, the Vedic system, is set up to try to counteract this centrifugal force and try to keep things focused on the center as much as possible, despite the tendency of individual human beings to become materialistic. A government, the purpose of a government is to keep people under control. If people didn't need to be controlled, if they could control themselves, you wouldn't need governments. But there are governments in this world because when you leave people alone, they just become materialistic. So a Vedic government is a government that gives spiritual guidance, that encourages the citizens to perform sacrifice and as much as possible become Krishna conscious. And many of the kings who are described in the Bhagavatam promoted in a very faithful way that Vedic culture. This is different than the history we learned in school. The current idea is that human civilization as such, advanced civilization, only began about 13,000 years ago. Before that, human beings were just wandering, looking for food, and had no technology other than stones, stone weapons. And they didn't live in cities, they didn't have any agriculture, they didn't... This is the current idea. There's one contemporary, he's a biologist, but he's involved in, he's something of an expert in the history of the human race. His name is Jared Diamond, and he's developed his theories about the development of human civilization. In his viewpoint, government is a necessary evil that you see primitive people, you can even see today. And he was the scientist, Mr. Diamond, went to Borneo many times to do his biological research. And so he had contact with the native people in Borneo, who are considered the most primitive people in the world, practically, except for maybe the bushmen in Australia. These people have no modern technology, basically, and live in very difficult situations, can hardly find any food to eat. And they are isolated. This island is full of mountains, and so there are many, many isolated communities. There are thousands of different languages spoken on this island of Borneo. You can go from one valley to the next, 5-10 miles, and find that people are speaking a totally different language. And so he heard of a He didn't meet them himself. Yes, he did. He went to visit one tribe who basically had no government. They had no social organization. The people were so politically primitive that they just had no social organization at all. The families would just live apart from each other. In that area, you just see one house and another house 2 or 3 miles away. And the people had very little contact with one another. Not really a tribe, just a band of families wandering around as nomads. And he found, they were shocked, the anthropologists that went with him, they were shocked to see how chaotic that society was. Now, there's a romantic idea that before there was ever government, savage or primitive people lived in peace. And then when people became more materialistic, they had to start having governments. But he found, and his friend found, that these people with no social organization were living a very violent existence. That there were feuds going on constantly. And people had to stay apart because they would kill each other if they came together. Once a year, they would come together to have a council and swap women, for marriages. But it was a very violent affair. A man would see the other man from 100 kilometers away who killed his brother 10 years ago and want to kill him on the spot. And it would be a very dangerous situation. These people couldn't even get together in a group of 100 people without wanting to kill each other. So anyway, our scientist, Dr. Jared, he developed his theory that governments were necessary to keep people from killing each other. So that you can people could live together in a town, in a city, and live peacefully. But he uses a term to describe all the governments. We have different systems of governments, monarchies, democracies. But he says all the governments should be called kleptocracies. Kleptomania is a man who can't stop stealing. He's an obsessive thief. So he calls all the governments, ruled by obsessive thieves. That the business of the government is just to usurp the property of the citizens and take as much as they can for their own aggrandizement and sense gratification. That all governments are just basically thieves. And we look at the history of the world from the mundane point of view, it's like that. Most of the governments that have existed on this planet for the last 13,000 years have been very oppressive and exploitative of the citizens, with very few exceptions. Thousands and thousands of governments that have existed, they mostly exploit and abuse the citizens and usurp all the facilities for themselves. So our history in the Bhagavatam and other Puranas paints a completely different picture of at least what a government of human society can be. Our Vedic kings that we read about, these Rajarshis, their governments didn't exist just to exploit the citizens and to take away a good chunk of their property for themselves. They existed supposedly to promote Krishna consciousness. That is the purpose of government in Vedic civilization. So we should take this very seriously, that this is a radical challenge to modern history, that there is such a thing as government meant to serve the people in a spiritual way. But the element of Krishna consciousness must be there. As Jada Bharata says here, he describes that there have been many supposedly saintly kings in the past, who performed sacrificial rituals, which means that they followed the Vedic system. They weren't just barbarians and tyrants. And they were very confident in conquering other kingdoms. But despite their power, they could not attain the loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Jetabharata concludes, thus they died without having discharged life's real mission. In the Vedic system, a king should engage in warfare, if necessary, to expand and maintain his power. This is not, Vedic system is not against a king aiming to get power. It actually is. For brahmanas, they contribute, brahmins and kshatriyas both contribute to the maintenance of human society on a spiritual basis. But they do the same, they serve the same mission of promoting spiritual culture and maintaining the principles of Dharma, but the brahmins and kshatriyas each contribute in different ways. The brahmins give teaching and spiritual guidance, and their strength is their purity, their knowledge, the honesty of their word. This is the strength of the brahmins. The brahmins don't use, are not interested in economic power or political power. They should not be. The kshatriyas also contribute to the spiritual maintenance of human society, but they're supposed to get and maintain power. That is their contribution. Their political and military power. This is required. Not all human beings will just listen to the good advice of brahmins. Most human beings need to be forced to behave properly. There has to be strong government. So a kshatriya's duty is to have power. And power is obtained by political means, including warfare. So there are the Dharma Shastras, in which the great sages teach the principles of Varnashram. These Dharma Shastras are written mainly for Brahmins to study. And in the Dharma Shastras, the duties of all the different classes, varnas and ashrams of human society are elaborately explained. Down to the minor principles of traffic rules, like the Manusmriti, in one section it describes what is to be done if two vehicles, two ox carts, confront one another on the road, which one should give the right of way. Or there's another rule that if you're on the street, you're walking, and you meet a person comes your way who's carrying a load on his head, or carrying a load, you should give way to the person who's carrying the load, no matter who you are. He may be a Shudra, you may be a Brahmin, but if he's carrying a heavy load, you should give the way to him. So even these principles are taught in the Manusmriti and other Dharma Shastras. But the Dharma Shastras are studied by Brahmins. The Kshatriyas get their political training from a subclass of Dharma Shastra called the Artha Shastra. We have the Artha Shastra written by Chanaka Pandit. In past ages, there were other Artha Shastras. They teach the same principles of Varnashram, but with a special focus that's of interest to the Kshatriyas. Because the Brahmins are interested in general in all the ways of understanding how to maintain Dharma in human society. It's their duty to know the whole science of social organization. The Kshatriyas, their business is more practical. How to get power and maintain it according to the principles of Dharma. So the Artha Shastras that are written for Kshatriyas to study focus on politics. How to get power, how to maintain it. How to keep your citizens under control, how to deal with your friends and enemies in other countries. All these political questions are discussed in the Artha Shastra. So, a Vedic king, a Vedic government, is meant to use politics and even violence when necessary to help maintain the principles of Dharma. But the real focus, the real purpose of Varnashram Dharma is to promote spiritual life, to promote Krishna consciousness. So, ISKCON is first of all the society of Vaishnava Brahmins. But we're also, Prabhupada gave us the additional mission to help organize the Varnashram Society for the human race so that Krishna consciousness can become available not just to a few people who can become brahmacharis or grihasthas following strict sadhana, but for the whole human society, even those who can't follow our strict standards of Vaidhi Bhakti, they should be encouraged to somehow engage in whatever Krishna consciousness they can engage. And Prabhupada, following the orders of his predecessors, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he considered it a big part of his mission to also reestablish this Varnashram Dharma in a practical way to help you organize human society. I've been beginning to visit China, and in Beijing, the capital, there is the famous Tiananmen Square, the cultural, spiritual center of their society, and there is the famous gateway with the big picture of Chairman Mao, and there is some writing in Chinese, two slogans, one on the left side, one on the right side. On the left side, the slogan says, may the People's Republic of China last for 10,000 years. Well, we wish them luck, but we know from history that most ordinary dynasties, other than the dynasty of the sun god and the moon god, don't last hardly that long, 10,000 years. Especially communist dictatorships. They don't seem to last that long. On the other side of the big picture of Chairman Mao is another saying. Xie jie ren min tuan jie wan sui. May the unity of the people of the world last for 10,000 years. Well, that's our slogan. We should promote that. Lord Chaitanya's mission. We just have to make an arrangement somehow to replace that picture of Chairman Mao with a big picture of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We actually hope, or we expect, by the prediction of our acharyas, that human society will regain its spiritual focus, and the Sankirtan mission of Lord Chaitanya will be promoted for the next 10,000 years, and will have great influence in this world. And somehow the governments will have to organize themselves to promote, help promote this Sankirtan movement. Okay, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes, I think so, yeah. Yeah.
They're starving to death, and some people might even think, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Hello? Okay. Hare Krishna. Hi. So, some people think that, oh, they're heathens. I mean, they have their perception, that India, there are a bunch of heathens, they're all starving to death, they're a third world, that they're projecting that, lording it in, over material matter. So when I lived in Tamil Nadu, they were very happy. I felt tons of love. That was my perception, what I got. Very spiritual. I had many great experiences. And so I was looking at a news report one time, because there was a big tornado, and it killed tons and tons of people in Tamil Nadu. There's a big, not tornado, but a big wave.
Tsunami.
So there was this classroom full of people. They just had this disaster. And I saw it. There was like, so my perception, I was seeing classrooms full of Indian kids happy and cheering. And there was one Indian kid in there. And to me, it looked like he was in meditation. He was just contemplative, meditating. So the news reporter goes, "Oh my God, look at this." And they focus in on that one child going, "Oh my God, they're all dying. They're starving to death. They're all very, very unhappy." So, anyway, I just wanted to add that.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hi, Krishna. What are the practical things we're doing to implement Varnashram Dharma? You mentioned that that was, you know, part of the mission of ISKCON. So.
Well, we have to start figuring that out. We're not doing much yet. Devotees are talking about Varnashram Dharma, and they're trying to develop rural communities, but it's hard going.
But aren't those for just seriously practicing members? I mean, like, for instance, Shiva Ram Swami has that community in Hungary.
Yes.
I'm under the impression, though, that the residents there are people, people who are seriously practicing bhakti yoga.
They're regular devotees.
We haven't experienced
but they're very influential in Hungary. You know, they're very respected, and people pay attention to the devotees in Hungary. It's a small country, but we have very good reputation in Hungary, and the preaching is very effective. So even though it's a community of devotees, they're having an influence on the whole society. So devotees should practice Varnashram, are going to have to start practicing Varnashram among themselves to show the model. Difficulty is that nobody wants to be labeled, especially a Shudra. Yeah, we all want to be on the, you know, we want to be considered a Brahmin. So I don't think we should start, doing tests and assigning everybody to a varna. I don't think that'll be popular even, among our ISKCON devotees. There'll be resistance against that. So putting labels on devotees or other people is not what's required first. What we need to do is start focusing on the actual activities of the different varnas. Those who can function as Brahmins should start doing it. Brahmins have to be independent. If you're working for a salary, especially if you're working for the government, you can't really function as a Brahmin. So my view on development of Varnashram, that is not, it doesn't start with cows, it starts with Brahmins. Who's going to maintain it? Because we started our farms and got lots of cows, and now the cows aren't being maintained. So we need first some social organization, so the cow protection can actually be maintained. We need first Brahmins. We need devotees starting to actually function like Brahmins. Some, to actually, not be involved in business or in politics, but to be functioning just as Brahmins. For that to happen, they need to be supported financially and socially. And then when we have devotees functioning as Brahmins, they can start thinking about how to train up Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas don't fall out of the sky. They need to be trained by the Brahmins. How to do that, that's going to take generations of figuring it out and starting to implement it. Prabhupada organized ISKCON to teach his disciples how to function as Vaishnava Brahmins. So we just continue the ISKCON program, but start thinking more about organizing the whole society. We should have, ISKCON should focus more on education, should start thinking more about educational programs. That's Brahman business, is teaching. And we should teach people how to organize themselves and understand their position in human society, to organize themselves socially. So we should be doing a lot of development of educational programs. Okay, there are several hands here. I'll get to everybody, but yeah. Okay. Archie Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Like everything else in Krishna consciousness, thank you, by the way, for a very, very stirring presentation. Like everything else in Krishna consciousness, this development of Varnashram is going on a subtler level than we can perceive most of
us.
Very subtle level, yes, because as Prabhupada said, this demon crazy, so-called democracy, is here to stay. You're not going to get rid of it and put in a Veda king. It's not going to happen. So the way to influence a democracy or the democratically inclined society is to influence the grassroots, as the politicians well know. If you can get to the grassroots, then you have a chance of getting your man in place and getting your agenda fulfilled.
Yes.
So that's what we're doing with this book distribution. Of course, we should do it more vigorously.
Yes.
But when you transform the society on the grassroots level, they will gradually start to demand more honest leaders, more Vedic, if you would, leaders.
Yes.
And that's the only chance we have. Just like with farming, rather than taking a city person and trying to convince them how to become a farmer, go and preach to the farmers and make them devotees. So rather than trying to create so-called ISKCON Kshatriyas, go and preach to the military. Every book distributor knows the people in the military are some of the easiest to approach. You show them. This Bhagavad Gita was spoken on the battlefield.
Yes.
Immediately they're interested. So rather than trying to create so-called devotee Kshatriyas and devotee, you know, farmers and stuff, we need to go out and preach to the farmers and preach to the military people and get them to become devotees. They're already inclined in those ways.
Yes.
So if you can take military people and make them devotees, if you can take farmers and make them devotees, then all of a sudden, voila, you have, you know, the beginnings of a Varnashram institution.
Of course, our most important business is just to preach, and our most important preaching is distributing Prabhupada's books. If every single devotee in ISKCON gave himself fully for just book distribution and did it until he was 85 years old, he or she, then that would serve our purpose the best way. Unfortunately, not everybody's going to do that. Beside that, I think we still need to start thinking about organizing society, because people are, after reading the books and starting to practice Krishna consciousness, they're going to ask for guidance. They're going to want leadership, and we're going to have to be able to provide it. So we do have to start training up leaders, Brahmins, and eventually Kshatriyas, because people are going to come to us and ask for leadership. Are we ready to provide it? Yes. I hardly know what that is, but okay. I'm sorry, I'm old. No. No, you should do what you can do the best. But all devotees, all serious devotees, committed devotees, should do their activities under proper spiritual guidance. Yeah. So you should consult whoever you take as your authorities about your plans. You know, don't just pursue them whimsically. That's the main advice I can give. Whatever you do, you should do it with counsel, taking counsel and advice. Just like book distribution should be pursued, but, you know, unquestionably. But book distribution also has to be done under guidance. If we just, you know, told everybody's here, take all these books, bring back money, you know, somehow or other, and it wasn't organized, who knows what would happen? Things happened in the distant past that shouldn't have happened because it wasn't properly organized. So everything in Christian, all activities in Christian consciousness have to be guided and organized. So you have your plans, but you should, you know, follow your spiritual guides in how and what's appropriate and how to do it. It's probably inadequate. Yeah, we need someone we can talk to, yeah, and get a face to face answer. So therefore, we everybody needs, you know, to have a shiksha guru that he can consult with directly, one or more. And also, if we're working in a community, there's, you know, management, and we should work in cooperation with the management, unless we're working all by ourselves. Practical points. But Prabhupada thought these things very important. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Prabhupada's guru, he would travel a lot around India, especially in South India. He would spend a couple of months almost every year traveling. And he met many people who considered themselves Vaishnavas and wanted to be respected as Vaishnavas. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, you know, was very critical, you know, of hypocrisy. So whenever he met someone who claimed to be a Vaishnava, he would ask him one question. Under whose guidance are you practicing the service of Krishna? And if the man said, well, I'm just, you know, serving Krishna directly, I don't have any guide, then Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati would refuse to take that person seriously. So everybody, every devotee, has to have practical guidance. Can't be just, you know, it's not just my mind, you know, directly associating with Krishna. Your mind is not pure enough yet to just directly associate with Krishna. Even in the spiritual world, you know, every cowherd boy, every gopi has his connection to Krishna through a hierarchy of superior cowherds and gopis. That etiquette is always maintained, that we're serving Krishna under higher direction. Prabhupada is the shiksha guru of everybody who actually considers himself a member of ISKCON, yes. But he's not our diksha guru. Everybody should take initiation in the normal procedure. And most devotees need to have somebody they can talk to get guidance from beside that. I mean, you can get to your guidance directly from Prabhupada. That's true. But in practice, most of us need to be able to talk to somebody. Yeah, well, but if you just consult everybody and pick and choose the answers you like, you got to have some serious relationship with somebody who you trust. Okay. What else is there? Anybody else? Archidipo? Okay. All right. I guess there's nothing else. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.